My special guest in the studio is widely known as one of the UK's most successful exports, working in jazz and new music. Much of his output reflects interests beyond conventional jazz boundaries, and he's increasingly acknowledged for large ensemble writing, including many orchestral pieces. His CD Libra, described by critic Stuart Nicholson as quite possibly the finest album by a British jazz musician in recent times, has had truly rave reviews. Tim Garland, welcome to Now's the Time.
Thanks, it's a pleasure to be here.
In February this year, Chick Corea's album, The New Crystal Silence, won a Grammy for Best Instrumental Jazz CD, and you played a major role in the orchestration of that album. Mm-hmm. A special congratulations to you from Sydney,
thanks,
given it was recorded here.
You bet.
At the Sydney Opera House with the Sydney Symphony Orchestra.
Yeah.
What has changed for you since that recognition, Tim?
Well, it was a surprise for me. It wasn't a surprise that Chick and Gary Burton got a Grammy, because their playing is so exemplary and wonderful. The fact that, you know, I was able to share in that too was wonderful. And I, for 20 years, have been interested in large ensemble, orchestral, perhaps non-jazz, you know, writing. And it's taken that long for both sides of my career, if you like, to arch around and meet each other again. So both the jazz and the writing, you know, for these large forces. And now I've just, you know, just turned 43. I finally feel as if it's all come together. And that came, you know, at just one of those moments. I thought, well, that's a real sign that I'm thinking right, you know, getting that accolade.
I was talking to a friend of mine who's a guitar player, and he raised a question with me that I thought I might pass on to you, because it's something that I don't know. Do you actually get a Grammy from that win yourself?
Yes.
You do?
Yeah, it's on my mantelpiece. Yeah.
So the reason he asked the question is because he was wondering, well, does every member of the Sydney Symphony Orchestra also get a Grammy?
Well, you know, you would think maybe they should, perhaps, you know. It's, you know, the team, the creative team, including the mixing engineer, etc., you know, will get something, because it's a Grammy for the product, if you like, the production of the product. But yeah, you would have thought, actually. I mean, I felt like after working with that orchestra that they all deserved it, because we all worked really hard. It's a great orchestra to work for. You get an enormous buzz. This time, of course, I wasn't playing at all. I was just helping, you know. I did all the orchestrations, and you know, I was there marking up the parts and upstairs, you know, in the mixing desk. But I still got a huge buzz working for them.
Well, of course, you're here to play with the Lighthouse Trio, mm-hmm. and in support of a brand new recording, well, a relatively new release for you. I think it came out, February this year?
Yeah, that's
Libra.
Right, yeah.
And at the core of this album, Libra, is what you call the Frontier Suite. And behind that, of course, is Gunther Schuller's comments about what he called the next frontier.
Yeah, well, in essence, the Lighthouse Trio is just a trio, but its birth was very much mixed with my love of joining together musicians who improvise, which is, of course, what the trio does so well, with, you know, large ensemble forces. And I was in Canada, and I listened to Gunther Schuller speak about how he felt that the next frontier was the use of orchestra in a way where, you know, once upon a time, these forces would be oil and water, you know, that people would distrust each other, looking over their music stands, and one wouldn't understand the other. These days, you know, there's such a lot of mutual respect. I mean, most of the jazz musicians I know absolutely love what orchestral players are able to do, you know, the discipline, the textures and the writing, etc. And also, you know, you get amazed looks from a lot of the orchestral players when they see us improvise. And in a way, it's maybe, for me, the most exciting area of musical growth that the 21st century right now could offer, from my point of view. You know, that there's the ground to be celebrated is so vast and so full of potential. And also, throughout jazz history, there's always been that, right from George Gershwin onwards, you know, before George Gershwin. So really, it's a continuation and a maturation of all of that stuff. So when I heard Gunther Schuller say about the next frontier, I thought, wow, you know, I couldn't get near. I wanted to run up and shake his hand. I still would love to meet the guy, but I wasn't near. I was right at the back of the hall, and I thought, you know, that's the name of my piece. I'd already written it, you see, and it just needed a name.
After dinner tonight, I grabbed out my March edition of the 1995 edition of Downbeat magazine, where Gunther's talking with Joe Lovano. They just released Rush Hour.
Uh-huh.
And I just thought I'd share this with you because I think this probably gets to the essence of what he was saying that particular occasion. I wanted to break new ground for how an 11-minute piece might be structured, including the entire range of possible expressions, not in a way where you say, here comes the jazz, here comes the classical, not as segmentation, but where it all forms one unit, whether written or improvised, coming out of a germinal concept.
Yeah.
Germinal as in seed.
Indeed, yeah, and he's got that so right. And I know that album, and I know Joe pretty well too, and they've been huge influences for two decades for me. Yeah, he's got it right on the head there.
Do you think that was a pivotal moment for you?
One of several, I think, yeah. You know, as you get older, I've always had a lot of diverse influences, and I think actually that's probably one reason why it's taken a little while for my own kind of solo career to take off, because I've really enjoyed collaborating. You know, I've worked with Chick Corea for about 8 years on and off in different projects, and sometimes they're so varied. People say, oh, isn't Tim Garland that saxophone player? No, he's the guy who does all that orchestral writing, but he plays bass clarinet. Oh, no, but I heard him do some film session over there, you know.
And with Billy Cobham's band.
Yeah, you know, things like that. And I've written Bill Bruford, you know, I've so much enjoyed all of this eclectic nature. And to me, jazz is it gets more and more exciting every year, because it's you know, when people say, oh, is jazz dead, is it relevant, blah 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 blah, actually jazz is the most relevant music you could have, because it takes the majority of its references, contemporary jazz, from today. So you have Asian references, you've got folk music from all around the world, and so if you're a person maybe like myself who likes to take these influences and pull them into the music, in this case, in the case of the Lighthouse Trio, in an acoustic concept, so we can just go out and gig live, you know, then it's something which, far from being kind of difficult to listen to, is something that, oh, yeah, I can understand that. You know, there's, you can hear this kind of global village aspect come into it. And on top of that, it's what we love to do live is just communicate the fun as well. You know, this all the orchestral stuff which I do, I've never been a fan of it becoming po-faced, and, you know, some of the classical concerts you get sometimes just a little bit almost too serious for their own good.
Well, look, I want to touch on that in a few moments. Tim, I haven't had the luxury of being able to listen to much of your back catalogue, but I get the inference from listening to Libra is that you not only have an interest in the grandeur of orchestration, but also in the egalitarian folk music.
Yeah.
To me, that's interesting, because coming from the UK, it has its history of hierarchy in society. Can you tell us about your own background and how music came to you?
Sure. Very musical background, lots of classical music, also in the 70s, you know, with my older brother and sister, you know, there was a lot of kind of prog rock, and also stuff which included folk music. Also, the people I used to hang out with as I moved to London and became a music student that were into all kinds of, you know, everything from kind of gospel jazz to Celtic folk. And I ended up running a band for almost 10 years called Lammas, which created about 4 or 5 CDs, which was a mixture of, yeah, just that Celtic folk with improvisation, etc. So right from the start, very kind of eclectic, I guess you could say.
I believe you enjoy poetry.
Sure, I always have done, yeah. Yeah, you wouldn't want to read any of mine, but yeah.
Would you like to share any with us now?
Oh, poetry. Oh, no. Well, let's see. The ones that... Now, how come the only thing which comes into my mind is that Philip Larkin one with all the rude words in? I really shouldn't say that on air. But, no, my very first CD actually was called Points on the Curve, going back to 1989. And there was Roger McGough and Philip Larkin, all kinds of poets, which I strung poems together to create a kind of narrative. But after that, of course, my co-leader of Lammas, Don Patterson, the guitar player, he is a very famous poet now, and that was main reason, I guess, why the band broke up, because he won the Fords Prize, the Booker Prize, all of the T.S. Eliot Award, all of the, you know, and he's a very famous poet, and rightly so. So he deals in words, and quite often I think there's a lot of shared ground between composition, in particular music composition, where it's all about distilling and distilling and distilling, and you try and get it down, 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 until the seed of what you're saying is so small but so powerful that it goes pow, and it, you know, like an amazing whiskey or something. Now, that's very different from improvisation, where you're letting it all hang out, and if you make any mistakes, that's all fine. It's all just in the moment. It's like water. It's flowing. And if you like, it's complementary to the point of being almost like an opposite. If composition is like poetry, then maybe improvisation is more like stand-up comedy, where there's, you know, you get the rapport, bang, bang, bang. You know, it's very entertaining.
Yes.
And I think that's, hopefully, that's what people get from our gigs, actually, when they see, like, for example, if you're not sure about jazz, go see it live. Go see a good band that know each other really well, where the rapport is strong. And you can see why people get excited and it's so knife-edge, because of the interaction. And that's something that you might not get from just listening to it on headphones or speakers, you know. That's the nature of performance art, isn't it?
It certainly is. The guitarist that features on this album, on I think about three tracks on the album, Paul Bollenbach, a recent visitor to these shores. You've worked with him over a number of years. Mm. What's it about his playing or his sound that attracts you?
Well, with this Lighthouse Trio, we've decided to keep it in the acoustic realm. You know, I've done all kinds of things with electric, and Paul was someone I worked with years ago who obviously plays electric guitar just great, but his steel string guitar has that kind of New York energy of being really gutsy and bluesy. And as you can hear with Bajo del Sol there, although we're kind of, if you like, a little chamber band, we want to pack as much punch in our own terms as a big electric band, just by the way we play. We really love to go for it. And with Paul, you get that kind of no-nonsense. I mean, he's got all of the knowledge and stuff under his fingertips to be, you know, a very sensitive player. But it's ballsy, you know, and that's what I loved about that. And we got him playing, for example, on one track on like a bottleneck, you know, and that, together with this strange mix of instruments, is wonderful, because you think, wow, I wouldn't have imagined that sound there, but it sounds great, you know.
But you brought Asif Serkis, the percussionist with the trio, who is born in Israel. You brought him the instrument, the Swiss Hung, specifically to play in this trio, didn't you?
Yeah, I knew he would be, because he was brought up playing hand drums.
Now, this is only a relatively new instrument. I think it's only been around since about 2001.
Something like that,
created
yeah.
by a couple of Swiss guys. What does the Hung look like, and what type of sound does it create?
Well, sure. The hand drum looks like a cross between a UFO and a wok. And it really does. You'll laugh when you see it. And it's got a beautiful sound. It's a bit like a steel pan. And, you know, it gives the percussionist the ability to play melody as well as all of the untuned things. And together with, you know, Asaf's Israeli influences, and so you can hear a lot of those kind of slightly Middle Eastern textures mixed in there with the jazz, you've got this kind of beautiful pentatonic sound. You know, we've just been in China, and, of course, that's the Chinese scale. So, you know, we had a lot of nodding of heads as soon as Asaf was playing the Hang. Again, it's one of these things, that scale, which is so common in so many different cultures around the whole world, is one of those things which makes, you know, this band truly, you know, universal in its language.
Hang Loose, and this is featuring that particular instrument. Can you tell us a little bit about this particular track, Tim, before we spin?
Yeah, well, this is the same one with Paul playing the slide guitar.
So, oh, okay, that's,
you know,
that's
you've got
the one,
that
yeah.
too. And because there are only a limited amount of notes on the Hang, I wanted, as a jazz musician, we all love harmonies, you know, these beautiful kind of changes. So I wanted to kind of reharmonize some of those notes, and that's how this tune materialized. But it's quite funky at the same time.
This album took you 3 years to create, and of course, when people see the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra, that immediately suggests magnificent substance to the album. Walk us through the process of being able to record with that orchestra. How do these opportunities come by?
Oh, sure. Well, the compositional process is really different. You know, when you're writing for people who improvise, quite often it's like Swiss cheese. It's full of holes. You know, your composition has to have lots of space and holes, because, you know, that's probably the stuff that's going to be the most exciting, because you're leaving the guys to do what they do best. When you're writing for an orchestra, obviously you've really got to know, and this is what I've studied all my life, orchestration and composition, and I've done a lot of film and media music. and I was working at Abbey Road, Studio 2, so the, you know, as they like to say, the world's most famous studio is the Beatles studio. And I managed to kind of effectively buy back half of one of the sessions I was doing for Media Music and say, hey, listen, I really, you know, I'm doing this project, you know, I conduct my way through it. So the orchestra, you know, we were playing stuff which obviously sounded very much like film music. And then just as the session was, most of the musicians in the orchestra were probably thinking, yeah, this stuff, you know, it's all quite easy, this is going to be good. I threw them my own stuff, you know, so now this isn't for film and TV, this is my project. And we added after that the Lighthouse Trio, so I had to record it in such a way which kind of allowed for that space, you know. This is the way that we, you know, financial constraints, you know, we had to do it, and that's how Frontier came into being.
You certainly wouldn't know it by the sound of the album.
Yeah, I think, I mean, when you're the composer and you, right from the start, you realise that's the way you're going to have to do things, you know, together with, you know, editing, modern technology, etc., it becomes possible to do that. Because you're doing that kind of thing all the time in film music now.
Yes.
You know, that you're editing like crazy because you're fitting in with visuals all the time. You've got the very first track is just the orchestra alone, because I thought, you know, that quite a lot of jazz musicians will use an orchestra as an elaborate background for them. And I thought, well, I really want to avoid that. The orchestra is on an equal footing. So I know what I'll do. The very first piece just has the orchestra, and then they allow us as improvisers to slowly sneak our way in. And then by the final track, Libra, which is the title track, we're more or less on an even footing.
Tim, do you think this is a definitive album? Of Tim Garland's?
Of mine, yeah. A lot of things about it are very, what's the word, autobiographical. You know, I'm Libra is my star sign. Today is my birthday. So it's, you know, it's all about balance. So Libras, apparently, they're not necessarily balanced. They're looking for balance, which is an important distinction to make, which I nod furiously to. We look for balance. We look for synthesis. And as I was saying earlier, you know, all my life I've been thinking, well, you know, I've worked in America so much with so many great American musicians, but yet I feel quite European. What is jazz anyway? Has it lost its European address? Is it truly a global phenomenon now? Is there any such thing as pure jazz? You know, is its very essence one of synthesis and inclusion and having fun and, you know, being a global community, which I resonate very strongly with? And all of these things, and this is why I guess it took two discs in the end, you know. But I just feel so grateful because the other guys in the band, especially Asaf and Gwilym, who have really toured the world with me this year, are like my family. They are brilliant players. They have amazing creative powers in themselves. And we've reached this point now where, although I'm very proud to have written this material, they own it just as much as I do.
Yes, and that's very important, isn't it, that rapport between the artists?
Oh, yeah, you bet. I mean, I think if you go and listen to your own or list your own top three or five jazz CDs, probably you'll find that one of the main reasons is because you can just hear they're coming so much from the same page.
Tim Garland, thanks for joining me.
Oh, pleasure.